Blog Talk Radio.
And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, they be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Mind, body, and soul, is you living? We all under attack,
is you different?
I know niggas existing in two prisons, feeling they through living like death is too tempting. What's a day worth? Put a price on it. He was 17, the judge dropped life on him. He ain't live yet, now he in the tight corner. Gang got their sights on him, on the yard with a knife on him. Family trying to tell him to chill, we gon' get you home. He like, how my pills said they took the wrong. That's kinda cold when you think about it. He shot a nigga, he ain't think about it, didn't even blink about it. But he was trapped in the hood and couldn't think about it. Really trying to be about it, never left his public housing, which resembles the dormitories he's trapped in. So who knew that they was prepping him back then? Yeah, on how to live packed in, make him hate his black skin. I swear it's all facts, man.
Yeah, I swear to God it's all facts, man.
So you should let the track spin. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Remember calling my mom to tell my sentence. Since I don't do no snitching, I'm not a witness. They gave me 23 years, ma.
I'm finished.
I think she cried for like 15 minutes. Over the years, there's enough tears to fill a lake. A lot of trips on
interstate for visiting.
Remember Tony got stabbed.
May he rest in peace.
Stressed my mother so bad, she barely slept for weeks. Thankful that it wasn't me. Knowing prison dangers. Doing time with lifers and killers and gangbangers. Some of us get caught in the matrix, but can you blame us? Trapped in cages like animals trying to tame us. Parole hearings are jokes, you go up 50 times. Same excuse every time. Serious nature of the crime. I can't change the crimes that I committed, but I can't change my mind and not repent. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though.
Yes, yes. Alhamdulillah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. We seek refuge in Allah from the shaitan, the devil, and the rejecter. And bismillah, in the name of Allah, we are here today on Point of Impact, you all. Point of Impact, that's right. That's right. Your podcast, the direct podcast that talks about the direct issues concerning our communities and our families, and most importantly, our nation. And also our people. You know, we are here for the people. We are of the people. We are about the people. And we're doing it real. This is what we do. We talk about the real, direct issues that have impacted us and continue to impact us in our communities and our families. I want to welcome everyone who is joining us today online and LinkedIn. We thank you for your support. Please call in today at 563-993-718. And remember, people, you got to press 1 in order to speak. So join us if you have anything positive you want to interject in. And please, we ask, you know, if you're uptight about something, you know, you can present it in a good manner. Let's not, you know, be ignorant and arrogant here. We're people of reason. So let's build like that. Krista, is you there today? Are you with him? Are you with me today, Chris? Okay. Krista might not be right with us. She rejoined us. She had a little, you know, some things she had to do today. And we're going to hope that we get her online real soon. But we should have our guest along with us. Jay Sean, our guest here with us, Miss Emily Shelton, and my main man, Sha Burrell.
Yes, I am.
Okay,
I'm here,
okay.
I'm here,
Shaw, you with us? Alhamdulillah. Yeah, that's my peoples right there, y'all. That's my man right there. Hey, listen, I want to tell y'all, man, we really getting ready to get some real true wisdom. We got a beautiful lady here we're going to all be introduced to, and I really all want you to meet her. I think the work that she's doing is truly something that we can't even put a price or value on. And what I'm so grateful for is that what she has created, it's not just in the state of Oklahoma, but it's also here in Virginia. And she's going to tell us in 5 more states. You want to introduce yourself, Sister Emily?
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Emily Shelton. I'm one of the founders of Ignite Justice. I actually live in Oklahoma, and I have my husband and my son locked up here. So I have 15 years experience with the juvenile system and also the adult system. And we are currently in 5 states. We're in Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Virginia, where my co-founder, Jennifer Dalton, just did the rally, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago. Right. So, yeah, but we are a nationwide organization, and we help in any state in any way that we can.
That's wonderful. Tell us, what brought about the name Ignite Justice? Why did you choose to brand your organization as Ignite Justice? Because that Ignite is serious.
Because justice is needed in every state. Every state has issues. Every state is, the inmates are treated wrong. And the only way we're going to be able to get change is if we ignite it. So that's how we came up with the name Ignite Justice.
And so what inspired you?
It took us like 3 weeks to come up with that name. Like, we had to have a strong impact name.
Yeah. Hey, listen. And you did that because when I was told that you guys were doing your thing in Virginia and in Richmond with Jennifer,
yeah.
Oh, man, I was like, I had to get out. I had to see who these people are. They igniting justice? Oh, they putting a flame to justice? I got to find out who they are. So tell us more. Like, what inspired you? What inspired you? What brought you to this momentum to push this call?
Well, actually, for me, I met a homeless man about 15 years ago that just got out of prison. He had nothing, no money, no clothing, no family support, and he was just thrown out of prison and put on the street. I went home, and it bothered me for 2 days, and I said, I need to get involved and do something. So that's really what started me. And then a couple years later, my son got arrested when he was 12 and went into the juvenile system. So it just kind of fell into place, you know, and I met my husband, and we just got married in December, so I am at Y incarcerated as well. So I already knew what I was getting myself into. But, that's really what started it is I met a homeless person, and he just touched me. And here I am 15 years later with a nonprofit organization and doing rallies, and I actually tour the prisons here in Oklahoma and talk with the wardens and try to work things out with the wardens. And, yeah, we're making big moves.
So exactly what issues are you, can you give us a point of where it is that you're really attacking?
So our mission is actually to foster community awareness and engagement to overcome the issues that are facing our justice systems. We also help with the families, the community, through education, support, and advocacy. Our goals are to educate and empower the community, to end the school-to-prison pipeline, lobby for meaningful legislation. Our biggest thing is advocating for all inside for their human rights, because nobody deserves to be treated the way they're treated, no matter what they're in there for. And we create educational programs on top that affect the criminal justice system, and we teach people how to effectively advocate for their loved one.
Okay. Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I said, so, like, what what things do you pinpoint on the education? Like, tell me a little more about that.
One of my biggest things that I focus on is success stories. Everybody always hears about how somebody reoffends. This one got out on parole and he reoffended. Nobody ever hears the success stories. Nobody hears how somebody started their own business or how somebody went to college and they have a career that they love. So I like to focus on that. If we could change people's mind of seeing the negative and seeing the positive that comes out of prisons, more people would be willing to step up and help. So that's one thing that I honestly focus on the most. And not only that, we also bring awareness to people's stories who are wrongfully convicted or have excessive sentencing. Like right now, Richard Casa, I don't know if people know his story, but he just got his death date, and this man is honestly innocent. We had 35 lawmakers that requested him to have his case reviewed because they believe he's innocent.
What state is he in? What state is this young man in?
In Oklahoma.
Can you repeat his name again?
Gossel. His name is Richard Gossel.
Richard Gossel.
Yes, ma'am. And what's crazy
when the show is over, I want you to send me the information on Richard Gossel, okay? We can also push in that momentum.
Yes, because what's crazy about his case is they just had 30 lawyers review his case, and every one of these lawyers said it pro bono, and they said that this man is innocent. And they still gave him his death date. So right now, we don't know what's going to happen. And the crazy thing is 25 of the legislators that believe he is innocent and push for his case to be reviewed are actually Republicans. And, of course, Oklahoma is a red state.
Okay.
And the DA actually destroyed a box of evidence when he was retried a second time years ago. So there's a lot of twists to his case, but I've been studying his case for years, and I 1,000% wholeheartedly believe this man is innocent.
Okay. Well, I have to really thank you for your courageous move, and personally knowing what it is to be incarcerated unjustly. You know, I get it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and my family has lived that experience, so. Thank you again, and you and Jennifer, for all the hard work you're doing. And by the way, we're going to have Jennifer on the show real soon. She's coming in. She's going to follow up, and you guys are going to love to meet her too. So let me ask you, as a mother who's experiencing the pain and the struggle and suffering of having your child that came from your womb in this particular situation of being incarcerated, tell us more about how that impacts you on a daily basis.
It's my worst nightmare. And the only way I can honestly explain it is it's like I buried my son, but he's still alive. That's the only way I can describe the pain. Like, it's hard. I worry about him every day. My son went in at 17. He's doing a 25-year sentence. They charged him as an adult for a robbery with a firearm. He did rob a gas station for $100, some candy and cigarillos. That's what my son got sentenced for.
Wow.
The sad part is, unfortunately, because my son was so young, he's not learning nothing in prison. He's still, to me, when I talk to him, he's still that 17-year-old that got locked up, even though he's 21 now.
Right.
The prison is not forcing him to do anything. He doesn't want to take his GED. My son has never made it past an eighth grade school level. So I worry about his future. Like right now, I honestly feel if my son were to get out, he would probably end up back in within less than 6 months. Because the juvenile system, my son's been in every juvenile center there is in Oklahoma from the age of 12 to 17. They did nothing but prepare him for prison at a young age.
Wow, that's amazing. I can definitely understand that. I myself, as a juvenile, experienced great, distraction, and you know, I was caught up in the wrong life. Right now, I want to while we're all enjoying this and getting this information from you that is really inspiring. I want everybody to meet Sha. Sha, you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody just exactly, you know, who you are and how you came to be in the position that you are today.
Peace, everybody. My name is Sha, and like my brother had alluded to or had mentioned, he and I, we have a shared history together. I too was an individual who entered prison when he was extremely young. I wasn't 17. I was 19 though, and so needless to say, 2 years is no major difference when you're that young. And so, you know, listening to her, especially coming from the standpoint of a mother, I could kind of like hear a lot of my mother's sentiment and fully understand where she's coming from as a mother. And I, you know, if nothing else, I just want to tell her from my mouth to her ears, you know, just continue to be strong. He's still relatively young. He's 21 still. The individuals that he's still around in prison are the ones who are still young-minded, still who haven't found themselves, you know, personally and maturely. And so I hate to say it, but if he has to serve a little bit more time, it very well he may come around then.
That's right.
But, you know, as it stands right now, you know, 17 to 21, there's no major difference there. And so that's why she probably still hears the same person that he was at 17, now at 21. And, you know, prison isn't going to force him to do anything. It has to come a point in time, you know, for him during the course of his bed and him not having things, seeing him grow up, miss things, seeing him grow past, and him starting to feel like I've grown past that is when he'll start to realize that, hey, my tomorrow is a little bit more important to me than, you know, all of that dumb stuff that I was doing yesterday. It's going to come. And, you know, I just urge her to continue to stay behind him and push in the manner that she's pushing and continue to ignite justice. I really appreciate it listening to her. As for me, you know, like I said, I came into prison when I was 19. I was a young kid. I had a very, very well, I guess you can call street mentality. I was actually in college. I came out to Norfolk State University, man. I had this New York mentality, man. You couldn't have told me nothing. I was this dude, and at the same time, you know, while I had this New York personality, you know, a large part of my background is Virginia, and so, you know, I went in with this like contradiction, to be perfectly honest. I went in, you know, went into college with this contradiction, man, and was not unlike so many other at my age, not knowing who the hell I was, what I wanted to be, and what it was I was supposed to be doing. And I always felt like I could be validated among a group of other individuals that was just as dumb as me, who was willing to do just as much stupid stuff as me. And so when it came to that, you know, I felt like decent was it, me trying to mark my territory and say, I'm this person, I'm from here, and respect me on these terms, because, you know, it's not where I'm at, it's where I'm from, and I need y'all to know that. And that's the type of, you know, time I was on. And you know, it kind of bit me in the ass, man. I got with this gang mentality. You know, and we was beefing with other cities. You know, I was doing stuff that as a child at 19, and I'm going to say child, as a kid at 19, the decisions that I was making I wasn't ready for the decisions that I was making at a 19, at 19.
Right.
And in my mind, I just knew I was definitely, you know, a grown person, man, Hash. And from there, I think I got bit as a result of that. And I lost,
you know,
I lost
one
my...
One of the things I wanted to let everybody know, you know, a lot of people, he's been a little humble right now, but Sean, I was there. I watched you create a beautiful business. I've observed you and I spoke to you while we was in the confinements of the Barbed Wire City. And tell the people a little more about, you know, what you ventured into, which and your business inspirations and how it led to what you're doing now in the streets.
You know, I always knew. For one, I want to say this. You know, there are geniuses in prison. And when I say that, I'm not saying to imply that I'm one. I'm saying that it's so much untapped potential in so many minds of individuals in prison that, you know, a lot of these guys could be borderline called geniuses. And so I said that to say, when you have a lot of time, when you got a lot of time to get with yourself, and kind of like, you know, smoothing out your rough edges, you start to realize, hey, I have a value, I have a potential, I have a skill set. And, you know, business is something that has always interested me. Needless to say, money has always been a motivation of mine. But when I realized, or when I changed my mind about myself and what I wanted my future to look like, I knew that me being business-minded and business-savvy was going to have to play a part. And so I stuck my nose in a book. And from there, I knew that creatively I was a person who I like clothes and I like social gatherings. And so for me, you know, I wanted to develop a clothing line, but this clothing thing was just like a gateway, if you will, into like more so of a social movement. And so, while I was there, you know, that's when I discovered that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and I wanted to move out on that. And so since I've been home, that's what I've been striving to do. I've been moving out on what it is that I know, you know, what was revealed to me while I was in them, that, you know, barbed wire cities, you say.
Yeah, I definitely, that's a little something that, I mean, it for me, that's what it is. It's a barbed wire city. You know, a plantation warehouse where people are in a minute society, you know what I'm saying? And we're just trying to get through and make the best of our circumstances. At least some of us are. Now, Sean, how much time did you serve, if you don't mind sharing with the people?
Yeah, I went in at 19 and I came home at 43, man. So quick math will tell you, 24 years. I spent 24 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Very long time.
Wow.
And
what is the name of your company?
Parvenu. And it's spelled P-R-V-N-U. And basically what the word means is, you know, it's a person who has recently or suddenly risen into some type of power, influence, or wealth or position. But they haven't acquired the social status that goes along with it. And I think that's all of us who come from, especially come from where we came from that, you know, specifically speaking, that barbed wire city. It's like, in there, you find yourself. And then you can really find yourself or you can lose yourself. It's one of those two. And for those of us who have found themselves, those are the ones who have come into their position, their wealth, their power, but we haven't been socially accepted because we got this social stigma on us. But, you know, we need to erase that, though. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Sean, if you could have one thing that the prison could do for you as a minor inside the prison, what do you think would be the best benefit for you at that time?
That's an excellent question. Very good. Yeah.
If you could you repeat it one more time? You kind of broke up.
I said if you could have had one thing offered to you in the prison at a young age, what would have been the one thing that you think could have benefited you the most?
I would have loved to have had those who left out in front of me that I saw as examples be allowed to come back to tell me which way to go.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And you know what? That is, I like that you pointed that out, Shaw, because one of the things that with my experience was that I was able to, I had people who supported me. My family, my brother-in-law, who is Osric Ingredients, and my sister, who is the founder of Tomorrow's Change. You know, when they would come and visit me, you know, they would insert into me, you know, incentive and motivation and inspiration to know that, you know, this situation is not, it doesn't have to be my narrative. And, you know, yesterday I had a wonderful day with a wonderful person. Her name is Stacy, and she's the NAACP president. And I had an opportunity to talk with her. And the one thing that she kept pressing to me is like, Malai, when are you going to change your narrative? When are you going to change your narrative to be more than just, you know, that lifestyle of crime and imprisonment that you've lived? Like, when is that going to take place? And so with the point of what you're bringing out and what you just stated about the men who have left and become successful, having the ability to come back into the prison really helps to establish a lot of corridors of upliftment. And, you know, opening the minds of young men to make them realize that, hey, you know what, I don't have to remain, and my narrative doesn't always have to be that I was a criminal, a bad person, a gang member, drug dealer, drug user, you know what I'm saying, and that I went through prison. Because they get an opportunity to see people in the flesh who have went through this, through the similar struggle, and came out to be successful. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you
got the credit.
Yeah, that was key. That's right. That's right. And so,
you know,
let me ask you something real quick, Sister Emily. Tell us,
yes,
like, are there any initiative programs that you have in place that are maybe allowing men to come back and women to come back into prisons to elaborate and share their story of success with the inmates, with the citizens incarcerated?
There is a program, but it's very hard to get approved. Like, I personally can't go into the prisons because I visit my son and my husband.
Mm.
So they there's a lot of, pretty much you have to be like with a prison ministry to get into our prisons here. But it sucks because I would love to go into the prisons and be able to talk to the guys, and I can't. You know, so it's frustrating. They make it very hard here. And I'm sure there's other states like that as well.
And Shaw, let me ask you, Shaw. Go ahead, Emily.
What I think is funny, though, somebody who's an ex-offender can go into the same prison that they know security rules for, and they can go in and talk, but I can't. I don't understand.
Well, you know, I'm going to just to be real clear, here in the state of Virginia, they have a policy that if you are one who is given volunteer permission to come into the prison, you have to have no absolute contact with the men outside of prison. You can't email them. They can't email you. They can't call you. You can't send them mail or anything. But they have ministry programs that they allow these people who come in. What is that program they had with the cookies, Shaw? Do you remember that?
When
they would bring all those cookies, Kairos. Now Kairos, they make an exception. You know what I'm saying? Kairos comes into the prison, brings all these cookies in. What is it? Twice a year, and they bring all these cookies in and give it to the guys, and they have, like, it's crazy. But yet, when you have, you know, people who have proven themselves to be civil individuals in society, you know, they won't allow them to come into the prison. That's why a lot of the men, you know, who and the women who are out doing advocate work, you know, they fall back from going into the prison because they're limited to their their means of being able to communicate.
Well, and what's crazy, too, is I actually sent a letter into my husband's prison here. So a little bit of history. My husband's prison is actually the worst prison in Oklahoma. It is basically gang. It's basically filled with gang members, and the gangs actually run this prison. It's been very clear.
What prison is that? What prison is
it? It's called Lawton Correctional Facility. It's a private prison. But I have sent this letter in to the guys.
Yeah.
And they actually been flagging their mail now from coming out to me. So I'm fighting with the prison now about, you know, you can't stop their mail from coming to me because I'm a nonprofit organization. As long as they're not doing anything to break security, legally they cannot stop mail from coming out to me. Well, we just got a new warden 2 weeks ago, so I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him yet. But I'll be addressing that.
I don't know all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Hey, Sean, she spoke of private prison. She spoke of private prisons real quick. Excuse me, Miss Emily. How do you feel about the fact that they've created a system that now profits off the struggles and hardships of the crimes that men and women are doing in society? How do you feel that is impacting our communities?
First, I look at it like whenever a business's inventory starts to swell up, you have to get more warehouses. And so, you know, the more individuals that's coming into prison, and that's by design, by default calls for more prisons or for more beds. So they outsource it to these private builders, these private contractors who, you know, build these prisons. I was at a private prison out here in Virginia for 5 years. I saw the good, the bad, and the ugly of what a private prison is. And, you know, for us to say that it's systemic, you know, that's a given. For us to say that, you know, it's written kind of like in the legislation, you know, that's a given. We have to get to a point where we're changing individuals' minds about prison, prisoners, prison reform, second chance legislation. We have to change minds because, you know, you always can get money from off of inventory. Now, so long as you have inventory, you have money. And in some form or fashion, a way is gonna be found for money to be drawn from that inventory. And so we need more.
Yeah.
We need more builders, and we need more builders for these bodies.
You know,
I can only speak on the
private programs here. I know for a fact that that GEO, the private prison, paid $2,500 to our legislators for his campaign. If people really looked and traced and saw how much money these private prisons pay into these campaigns for the Republicans, and they also pay into the Democrats, but they mostly pay into the Republicans.
Absolutely.
The private prisons to turn their head to everything that goes on inside that prison. And
you know, I saw our prison go from Whacking Hut to GEO or GO. And
that's right.
You know, while I was there, and I know all about them. It's a racket, you know. It's money to be made.
Yeah. And the prison you're talking
point
about
time,
is
you just gotta,
Lawrenceville.
Indeed, I'm talking about Lawrenceville. And I'm talking about I did things at Lawrenceville Prison except for walk up off of there. That's how loose and wide open and absolutely lawless it was. You know, they didn't have no standards that they have to particularly abide by. It wasn't a state institution. It wasn't a state facility.
Right.
And so they had a bar minimum that they had to meet. You know, they meet that bar minimum.
And that's one of the main issues. Like when I call here to Department of Corrections, they're like, oh, that's a private prison. You need to call GEO. Then when I call GEO, they're like, oh, no, you got to call DOC. So they play back and forth, so you can never get an answer out of anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the technology. You know what I'm saying? And that's the trickism that they bring into this folly. You know, you guys are two very, very knowledgeable people upon the issues. Now, let me ask you something. What do you think that we can do to maybe direct the attention more to the judicial system, which is the funnel of, you know, the, as you want to say, like in slavery days, it was the Atlantic, you know, through the Atlantic Ocean, but now they come through the judicial system and they funnel everybody into the prison systems. How do you think, you know, and I'm going to start with, I'm going to start with you, Sha, real quick. How do you feel that we can attack the judicial system to maybe find ways to stop incarcerating so many people with these minimal charges, giving them these harsh sentences, that we can maybe create something in the judicial system to attack the issues, to maybe assist these people to better themselves in programming before they get to the penitentiaries?
You know, Emily had mentioned something early on in her introduction. She had mentioned something about, you know, school to prison pipeline. And I think more resources need to be dumped into our schools and allowing those of us who have that shared experience. And I always, you know, I'm kind of big on being a credible messenger. And my experience and what it is that we've gone through makes me a credible messenger. And so our legislation in the judicial branch of things, whether it's local, state or federal, national, they need to allow those who have that actual experience have some play in the judicial direction that our country goes in.
That's right.
And,
okay,
that way we can voice and communicate what we feel is our equality. But you can't speak for me having not ever gone through what it is that I've gone through.
That's right. And Emily, how do you feel we can impact? Yeah, I need 3 minutes from you. Emily, we got 3 minutes to talk about this issue. How do you feel we can impact?
For one, I think people need to start caring about the people in their community first.
Mm,
a lot of people
okay.
don't care about what goes on in their community. If more people got involved and showed these kids a different way of life, things would be different. And the second thing is everybody needs to vote. People need to register. People need to vote and get these people out who don't give a crap about our lives. We need people in office who care about change and who care about the community and are willing to really, who are really about the community and not just about their numbers or views.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel you on that. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely not a fan of politics and politicians. I got to keep, but there are some good quality people who are in these political arenas. And, you know, I just pray that God directs those who will bring about rectification and restoration in our communities and on our institutions. Jay Sean, do we have anybody that would like to call in and speak? Jay Sean?
Excuse me. Say that again.
Do we have anyone is anyone trying to call in and speak?
Any callers on the line, if you want to go live, can you please press 1? Not at this time.
Thank you. Okay. Earlier today, I want to share something with you all real quick in this little 2 minutes that we have here before we move on to another topic real quick. Today, I was a witness again to a barrage of gunfire. And I was sitting in front of my shop, and many of you probably have seen some of my videos on Facebook where I sit in front of my shop because my shop is located right on the corner. And on the side of my shop, there's always a presence of, and by the grace of God today, their presence wasn't there, but there's always a presence of youth, young kids playing there. And I'm literally sitting at my shop and like the gunfire, the bullets are coming. I'm listening to bullets whiz past me. Shoom, shoom, shoom. And, you know, by the grace of God, I'm here having this show and attending the show and hosting the show with you all today. All praise, alhamdulillah, to Allah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praise and thanks belongs to Allah. Now, this has been an ongoing issue in our communities, gun violence and the rise of gun violence. Emily, what do you feel that can be impactful in maybe the escalating a lot of the gun violence that, you know, these youths are partaking in that's, you know, causing a lot of the ripples of violence in our communities? I know you said all of us coming together, but like right. What coming together to do what?
A lot of the problem, I think personally, is there's nothing for kids to do nowadays. There's no recreation centers in a lot of communities. There's no after-school programs for them. There's nothing for kids to do. And that's one of the problems. And unfortunately, a lot of parents have to work two or three jobs to support their family. So these kids are stuck at home doing nothing, pretty much. And we need programs, and we need to occupy their minds is what we need to do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Give them something to do if you guys looking for trouble. And that's one of the things I compare to, like, in prison. When you have guys sitting around not taking classes or something, what do you think's going to happen?
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We need to find something for these kids to do. That's one of the things.
And Shah, I definitely agree with you on that. Shah, you know, coming from New York and then coming out to VA, and, you know, we and you both know we kind of had a similar upbringing. Like, what do you suggest, or what do you believe can be some, you know, some tactics to kind of de-escalate a lot of the gun violence that's taking place in our communities right now?
Yeah, I honestly agree with Emily, man. We have to be able to give these kids an alternative. And, you know, we always say that, but we have to be able to fund a movement, man. We have to be able to throw money, you know, where we need our mouths to be. And if we can't get that behind, then our kids are subject not to follow, because to be honest, this generation, they so surface, or, you know, they look at everything on the surface. And you got to have some bells and whistles, man. You have to have something that's attractive. Once you get them in, then that's when you start to give them a different way of looking at themselves and at life. But until we have, you know, people that's going to fund us and really agree and understand, like, hey, you have a point there. We have to put something in their mind. Then, you know, we're going to continue to deal with this, man. We have to be able to.
Well,
they have to know who they are, man, historically.
Well, I believe personally that it's a conspiracy. I believe that a lot of the because if we created so many components to de-escalate, then the prison system, of course, would not be so lucrative, right?
Right.
And private business, the private industries of prisons wouldn't have really much of an interest to invest in their funding into building, prisons to warehouse and enterprise their money. So, you know, personally, I believe it's definitely a conspiracy that is laid out to escalate the stocks of, prison enterprises. And we definitely need to get some people involved who can bring about change in those areas. Shah, now, you've been home how long now?
4 years. Well, it'll be four in October.
Okay, okay. And so now, what are some of the things?
Thank you.
Yeah, hey, that's my dude right there, y'all. Hey, so what are some of the things that you've been investing your time into while you've been home to maybe benefit you and your family? Because I want everybody to be mindful. This man is a married man. He's his wife. He didn't do his time by himself. He did his time with people who love him and support him. And so we definitely want to give salute to all the beautiful women and beautiful men who support their loved ones while they're going through. You want to share with us some of the things that you've been investing in, like in your projects and in the projects that you've been home?
Yeah, and support is the biggest thing, too. And like you said, you know, shout out to my wife. Shout out to my little sister. You know, my little sister was 6 years old when I got incarcerated, man. And, you know, I came home to her 30th birthday. And,
wow.
And, you know, yeah, it was surreal, but she was there with me during the course of my bed. You know, my little brother, I got a main man who was there from the day I was found guilty in court all the way to the day I walked out. So my family and my support, you know, was there, and that's going to play a major part for anybody who's coming home, their support. But speaking of that, you know, I was, you know, we know a lot of people. When we came home, we networked with a lot of guys. And honestly, when I came home, there was a guy who was involved in logistics real heavy out here. And he and I, we had done time with one another, and we had mutual acquaintances. And when I came home, he was at, like, this little gathering for all of us that had kind of, like, came home. And he said, "Shaw, man, whenever you're ready, you know, I can bring you into what it is that I'm doing." And so from there, I kind of like been in the logistics game for the better part of 3 years, if not going on 4 years. And so, you know, as it stands right now, I'm a location supervisor at a logistics company, man. I'm putting people on. I interview people. It, you know, it's crazy because I'm the one who's like asking interview questions. You know, do you have dependable transportation? You know, how would you handle this scenario? And I'm the one who was, you know, just 4 years prior to this, was doing a 68-year sentence, who really didn't know that I was coming home. I feel, like I said, took on the necessary changes in myself to whereas the parole board, the administration, COs and counselors and whoever else saw a changed individual and they took a shot on me. It wasn't until I took a shot on myself and realized that, hey, I'm worth something. So when I came home, everything that I learned, everything that, you know, whatever book that I stuck my nose in, I'm applying that in some form or fashion out here.
Right.
And, you know, like you alluded to, I'm being a husband. I'm being a friend. I'm being a confidant. I'm being a big brother because it's a lot of, you know, my guys are still in prison and they call. They just want to hear me, you know, press zero and talk to them and, you know, send them pictures on JPay and stuff like that. So I'm still that. And so, you know, all of those things, you know, I transitioned into over the years that I was in prison. It wasn't overnight. 24 years did that. It afforded me that much. Even though I lost so much in that time, 24 years also afforded me a whole lot of growth opportunity, man. And now that I'm here, I'm just trying to make good on what it is that I've grown into. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, brother, you are an inspiration to me. If you
hey,
guys
we,
are
hey,
on
listen,
my Facebook
we
page.
We inspire each other, man. You know that.
Yeah. But, you know, I one of the first people I was able to gather with was with Sha. If you go on my Facebook page and my profile, you can see him and two of my Sahabas, my companions, Shaquille Ali and Yahya Ibn Gaspin. You know, they're in my profile, and that is because they're dear to me. They're men that I was in the trenches with, I struggled with. They were men who loved me, who helped cultivate me and to the man that I am today. And, you know, brother, you know, I definitely am so grateful to Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah the Most High, for granting me to experience what I experienced and to be able to be one who grew from that experience. Sister Emily, before we can get out of here, because we got... Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. You can tap in on that.
I just want to say to everybody, never give up on your loved one that's locked up. You have to fight for them. You have to fight for their human rights. Don't worry about retaliation, because they're being retaliated on regardless if you fight for them or not. You have to make it worth the retaliation. So many people fight for their loved ones because they're scared of retaliation. I will tell you this. I am on the news all the time. I'm on news articles. I'm constantly exposing the prisons here. Nothing has ever happened to my husband or son. You can't call one time and complain and think that's all you have to do. You got to fight every day for them and continue to fight for them.
That's right. Thank you for sharing that, sister. We got 10 minutes left here, y'all. Sister Emily, you want to take like 3 minutes and just tell everybody what else are you doing right now with Ignite Justice besides the rallies?
Well, I do want to announce we are having a rally here. It's called Freedom for All on August 6th. It's going to be at the state capitol here. I will post it in our group live. We have the death penalty action and Oklahoma Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. We have a program here for the women's program called the RISE program, which is very successful. It's been up and running for 3 years now, and not one person that has come home in that program has reoffended.
Wow. All praise to Allah. Alhamdulillah.
It's an excellent program, and she actually just got a house donated to her where she can house some of the girls and help them be successful, too, when they come home. So that's one thing that we have going on here. I'm also involved right now with, we're doing a research with a couple other people and somebody from Department of Corrections, and we're trying to figure out ways to make visits better for us and for the guys and the women. So we are working on ways to make visits better for everybody, because it is important to have visits and phone calls, and we're looking at other ways to penalize the guys instead of taking away their phone or commissary. We're looking at other ways that they can, I hate to say punish them, but that's what they're doing. So we're looking at other ways so that they don't cut off that communication with families at home. So that's a big project right now that I'm excited about. And
let me plug in now. Don't forget, you want to tell the people about your, because you got a little minute here. You want to tell the people real quick about your podcast. Going up with and about Kenneth about Deuce. What you guys?
Kenneth Hunter has just became our spokesperson for Ignite Justice. We are very excited about that. I believe he will bring a lot to the community as well as the guys inside and the women as well. And he's actually excited to look to help in all states. And starting next Wednesday, we are starting a podcast, which is called Beyond the Walls. And Kenneth will be our first story that we're talking about. He will be talking about his incarceration and what he's doing now since he's been home, because he is a success. Man is making music. I love that you had his song on the beginning of your show.
I'm just saying thank you. And yes, he granted us that permission, y'all. Let me just tell you, we had him on his show.
We're doing his story first, and then the following week, we will be addressing a story here. His name is Deshaun Mack. He was given 210 years, and the witness said that he wasn't even one of the guys that were in her house that day, and they still gave him 210 years. His wife will be on telling his story. And then we're going to have an XCO talk about what he dealt with when he was locked up as well, So we have a lot of good stories coming up and good ideas. So that's going to be every Wednesday at 8 o'clock on Eastern time and 7 o'clock Central time, I believe. Let me just double check.
Okay. And Shah, now you want to tell everybody, you want to share with everybody a little something before we close out here? You want to share with, you know?
Yeah, indeed. Hopefully in the very near future, man, I'm anticipating or planning on starting my little situation called Pipe Dreams, man. And, the PIPE stands for Preventing Incarceration, Providing Educational Dreams, man. And so it just comes from me. I was always a teacher's aide while I was in prison. For about 20 years out of the 24, I was a teacher's aide. And so I was able to see dudes get their GED and that light turn on, the educational light turn on. It kind of like get them to start changing their minds about themselves and about future. So so hopefully for the end of the year, man, we can have this Pipe Dreams thing up and running, and we can get some people behind it. And the school to prison pipeline thing, we can plug that up or, you know, get rid of it all together.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You need to reach out to me.
I definitely am going to. I already hear where you're going.
Alhamdulillah. I'm grateful, so grateful, so grateful. I can't even give you enough praise. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. It was a fabulous show, very informative.
Hey, thank you,
and listen, you know, I'm dedicated, I'm devoted. You know, one of the things that I was in prison, I was a man who, you know, when you was in my circle, you know, I loved you and I cared for you because that's, you know, how I was groomed. I come from a cloth where the people you walk with is the people you hold down. And you know what I'm saying? But I extended that love to a lot of young men and men who were my elders and peers. You know what I'm saying? Because the love was being extended back to me. So there's a lot of stories of truth. And a lot of times, and I like to call us, we are the truth survivors. You know what I'm saying? And we brothers in and brothers out. So, you know, I like to just make people aware that, you know, I know you hear a lot of horror stories about men in prison. I know you hear a lot of denigrating things about men in prison and women in prison. But you'd be amazed to see how many of these people are really, as both Emily and Shah has spoken, are very intelligent, genius people with a lot of potential to go out and do the right thing. And we need to continue to support these brothers and these sisters and strive to provide for them the necessary needs of, you know, rectification of re-education and recultivation that is necessary. We're about to close out here. Before we close, I would like to tell everybody, I want to mention real quickly, there was a young man who was very dear to me, and I want to give love to his family. My brother, Kevin, K-Sean Jones, we grew up on 17th Ave with me and Jay Sean, and Nayshawn, his brother, his eldest brother. Nayshawn, we hope you're hearing us. If you're not, we hope that this message gets to you and your family, and we are definitely praying for you all that Allah give you guidance and strength to get through this loss. I buried my brother in May, March the 9th, so I definitely identify with this pain. And I'm asking everybody to send up prayers for that family and the Jones family. And just know that, brother, we're here for you. And anything we can do, we got you. Point of Impact is here. My co-host today, she was a little boggled down. Krista, we miss you. And she'll be joining us hopefully next week. We're having a beautiful brother on by the name of Locks. Him and his family will be joining us. So please tune in. Get this tune in. And you guys, man, dial that one. I know you got something to contribute to this conversation. I know you have information to contribute to this situation. So please, you know, dial in. And then once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Jay Sean, you want to give a shout out real quick? You want to say something real quick?
Yeah, I want to send the condolences also to the Jones family. And it was a great show. Everybody stay safe. Peace.
Peace. And so with that, And with that, we closing up, y'all. And we love you all. Remember, y'all, Point of Impact. Join us again next week, Sunday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. And remember, take this time to do something that will benefit you in this life as well as the hereafter, and that will benefit your family, and that will benefit your community. Okay, Jay Sean, I'll see you next week, bro. I love you.
I love you. Peace.
Peace.
I might never let the pain show me, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show me, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Mind, body, and soul, it's you living. We all under attack,
it's you different.
I know niggas existing in two prisons, feeling they group living like death is too tempting. What's the day worth? Put a price on it. He was 17, the judge dropped life on him. He ain't live yet, now he in the tight corner. Gang got their sights on him, on the yard with a knife on him. Family trying to tell him to chill, we gon' get you home. He like how my pills there, they took the road. That's kinda cold when you think about it. He shot a nigga, he ain't think about it, didn't even blink about it. But he was trapped in the hood and couldn't think about it. Really trying to be about it, never left his public housing, which resembles the dormitories he's trapped in. So who knew that they was prepping him back then? Yeah, on how to live packed in, make him hate his black skin. I swear it's all facts, man.
Yeah, I swear to God it's all facts, man.
So you should let the track spin. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Remember calling my mom to tell my sentence. Since I don't do no snitching, I'm not a witness. They gave me 23 years, ma,
I'm finished.
I think she cried for like 15 minutes. Over the years, there's enough tears to fill a lake. A lot of trips on
interstates for visiting.
Remember Tony got stabbed,
yo, may he rest in peace.
Stressed my mother so bad, she barely slept for weeks. Thankful that it wasn't me, knowing prison dangers. Doing time with ISIS and killers and gangbangers. Some of us get caught in the matrix, but can you blame us? Trapped in cages like animals trying to tame us. Parole hearings are jokes, you go a 50 times. Same excuse every time, serious nature of the crime. I can't change the crimes that I committed, but I can change my mind and not repent. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though.